The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Have they told you that you're going to play Sunday, or is there any doubt in your mind? Or have they told you that?
To my knowledge, it is, but I don't want to speak for them. Obviously, we'll see moving forward. I'm preparing as if I'm playing, so you know, we'll go from there.
So you're saying there's a chance. It's Commanders defensive tackle John Allen talking to the Scrum of reporters moments ago out at practice as the Commanders get geared up for their big-time showdown Sunday against the Atlanta Falcons. It is the youngest in charge, Lenoe Willingham, sitting in for Grant and Danny. Here on the day after Christmas, we will take you up to 6:30 before handing things over to the Take Command podcast. Joining us momentarily on the guest hotline is our pal Ben Standing. I believe he is still out in Ashburn. We'll get the latest for practice on him. A couple of programming notes. We will give you a very specific health update on the great eight, Alex Ovechkin, before we get out of this 5 o'clock hour. We'll also spin around the National Football League a little bit. There's a certain gum-chewing future Hall of Fame head coach that is interested in a potential head coaching vacancy. We'll get you that before we get out of here as well. We'll also let you hear from Cliff Kingsbury and Joe Witt Jr. But right now, let's waste no time. Let's go out to the guest hotline where we find our pal Ben Standig. Make sure you check out Ben's work in The Athletic and check out the Standing Room Only podcast, one of my absolute favorites to get up to speed on the burgundy and gold. Ben, happy holiday season, my brother. I appreciate you giving us some time.
Linnell, yeah, thanks for having me on.
For sure, man. We just played the audio of John Allen basically saying, I expect to play this weekend. I want to start with that. Based on body language and things of that nature, how confident are you that John returns to the field this weekend?
I mean, I've been hearing going back to like a week or so ago that this would be the game to really think about him coming back. And then, you know, it is, as he said, ultimately up to the training staff and the coaches, but he certainly looks like he's, you know, believes he's ready to go. And it doesn't feel like it's one of those deals where somebody's like claiming they want to, or saying they want to play, but they know in the back of their head there's no chance. It seems to me like he thinks he's going to play, and that's kind of my expectation at this point.
With how well Washington defended Saquon Barkley after the Jalen Hurts injury, outside of that 69-yard scamper, what type of addition is John to the lineup, and do you have any inkling as to what capacity he'd be available to the team?
Not really yet on any of that. I mean, Joe Witt Jr. said today he imagines whenever John is back that he would be on some sort of a pitch count.
Okay.
So, you know, at a minimum, he just gives them more depth than they currently have, even though they've gotten some good play in recent weeks from backups like Sheldon Day and Carl Davis, along with obviously Johnny Newton's been pretty solid in the middle. So, yeah, at a minimum, it's depth. You know, how much he's going to be able to play, you know, whether it's a stamina thing or so on, you know, that's to be determined. I mean, look, you know, this is a guy that's obviously been, you know, one of their top two or three players for the previous several years. He's a guy that gets up good pressure up the middle. Now, that said, they were still getting run on all over the place the first, you know, 5+ weeks when he was playing.
Yeah.
And they've continued to get run on pretty much for the most part this season. But in theory, obviously, he should help, you know, give them, again, at a minimum depth, at a maximum, you know, a potential Pro Bowl-level guy that they haven't had since week six.
Ben, I got to ask you this. We've been kicking this around on the phones for about the past hour. Plenty of calls on it, plenty of tweets. It's a simple question, but I just want to get your thoughts. Does Sunday's win make you look at the Commanders any differently moving forward, Ben?
Not really. I think the only thing, because, you know, look, the Jalen Hurts part of this, it's pretty hard to ignore. I mean, the Eagles were, you know, they were up 21-7 in the first quarter. They definitely, Washington certainly did better against Saquon Barkley as the game went on, but that was really, to me, you know, a massive aspect of losing Hurts. And, you know, Kenny Pickett was fine, but he's not Jalen Hurts, and Washington could focus there. That said, I think the one thing that it didn't change, but it reinforced that, you know, Jaden Daniels is a massive difference maker. I mean, they had no running game. The receivers, other than Terry McLaurin, have, you know, this is a good game for some of these other guys, but they're not guys that are scaring opponents. You weren't getting anything out of Zach Ertz, and they still scored 36 points against one of the better defenses in the league. And not saying it's all because of that, because of the quarterback, but yeah, maybe kind of, maybe it was.
Yeah.
I mean, his ability to get away from tacklers to get that 4th-and-11 scramble was pretty dramatic and pretty impressive. And, you know, obviously the poise that he's shown over and over again, especially in those clutch moments, is off the charts. And, you know, I don't buy the notion that Washington's the team you don't want to face among the wild card teams you don't want to face, but I wouldn't want to play against Jaden Daniels. Like that, his ability to be so tough in the clutch, that's not normal for any quarterback, let alone a rookie or a veteran. So, yeah, that aspect maybe is a bit of a change, or again, a bit more of a reinforcement. But overall, not so much. You still want to see if they're going to make the playoffs. Do they have enough to really contend and possibly beat the better teams? And yeah, they did this week, but only kind of, sort of.
Yeah, I definitely pick up what you're putting down there. But I think just taking our, you know, media part away from it, right, and just looking at it at the core of what we are at the end of the day, it's just fans. Ben, how exciting is this? Because I came away from Sunday like, dude, they didn't even play their best, Ben. Six turnovers if you count the turnover on downs. And they still put up 36 points on the league's best defense. I am a believer in the fight that this group has, but I agree with what you said. The quarterback right now, Ben, and tell me if I'm speaking of hyperbole here, and maybe I am, and maybe it's too premature, but Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes, how many more quarterbacks are you taking ahead of Jaden Daniels right now?
Yeah, no, I'm not sure any. I mean, look, that's the thing. It's like he's never had the rookie moments. I mean, yeah, sure, he's made some mistakes. He had two interceptions this game, and these picks were on him. It wasn't like batted ball. But, okay, everybody makes mistakes, but his ability to overcome them, to move on to the next play, to gain yards with his arm, with his legs, and to move past the next play. Cliff Kingsbury said today that he's never been around somebody who's better at going on, being focused on the next play, no matter what happened on the last play. And it's pretty remarkable, and that's why, you know, if they're in whether it's this game against Atlanta or if they make the playoffs, you know, if they're down late, you believe that he's going to be able to lead them to a comeback. And when you have that, it just makes it so much better for everybody else to keep playing hard. You don't feel like, oh crap, this thing's over. It's never feels like it's over with him. And obviously on top of the fact that, you know, the last 20-plus years have been largely miserable.
Yeah.
So to have this happen and also knowing that it isn't just this year, that Jaden Daniels is, you know,
right,
barring the unforeseen, is going to be like this kind of guy for the next umpteen years. And that's incredibly exciting because we know in this sport, if you don't have that guy, your chances of really competing at the top of the league are pretty hard, pretty tough.
And Washington, you know, for all intents and purposes, for sure has that guy. Ben, someone called in earlier and said, Timothy Daniels. And he said it so casually, Ben, that I was like, who? Wait, who'd you say? Did he accidentally say Jalen? that just shows you how well the dude is playing. He's being embraced by the fan base in a way that, you know, I don't remember a quarterback being embraced. So it's been really fun to watch. Ben, I want to ask you this, though, because I remember I had you on about a month ago. I think this was before the Tennessee game, and we were talking about the three-game losing streak and the proverbial cliff. Sunday in particular, while I learned that, while it was solidified, rather, that Jayden Daniels is that one-of-one special guy, seeing him do it up against a marquee defense, I also got to give a ton of credit to Cliff Kingsbury, because, Ben, you know it. It's 7 or 8 plays each week where Jayden Daniels makes your jaw drop. But it felt like, you know, on Sunday, yes, there were those tight window throws, especially the one he throws on a rope to Crowder for the win. But Cliff Kingsbury's ability to scheme open Jamison Crowder, Deami Brown, Olamide Zaccheaus, no disrespect to those guys at all, Ben, but you can be real with me. His ability to scheme open B and C level receivers against the league's best defense, super, super impressive. What did you learn about Cliff on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't a believer in the notion of the cliff. I mean, it just seemed like, you know, if you looked at the past, there's a lot of circumstances that were getting ignored if you just look at just pure numbers. And he's, you know, from the beginning of this year, it seemed like he had been making a decent amount of adjustments all along. And now, like, you know, when it was after Noah Brown and Austin Ekeler hurt, they originally were going with like a little more two tight end sets. Then with Zach Ertz banged up this week, it was a lot of four receivers. And, you know, especially late when the running game just wasn't working. And, you know, like you said, I mean, it's one thing to maybe call certain plays or for certain formations, but to then have the guys get open. And, yeah, I mean, Zaccheaus and Crowder, you know, look, fine players, but neither one of them is a go-to guy. Neither one of them is an NFL starter per se. And yet, wow, I mean, they really – you know, they scored 4 touchdowns, and it's been really impressive to see what they've been up to and how they're able to succeed.
We're joined right now on the guest hotline by our pal Ben Standing. You can check out his work at The Athletic, and make sure you check out the Standing Room podcast wherever you get your podcast. Ben, I want to ask you here real quick about the injury report right now for Washington heading into Sunday's matchup against Atlanta. Marshawn Lattimore officially listed as a DNP. I believe Deami was a DNP. Wiley was a DNP. Out of the guys that, I guess, did not participate today, whose status, Ben, do you think is in the biggest question leading into Sunday?
Yeah, we'll get more on the injuries when Quinn is talking to us again tomorrow. So I don't, you know, it's hard to know exactly to like what degree anybody is feeling it. But I think the Lattimore one's obviously the biggest concern because there was already a pre-existing injury that kept him out for several weeks, and you know now he's got a hamstring again. So you know, if this is just another kind of reoccurring injury, and he's just a guy that's missed a bunch of games the last few years, you know, then you got to start wondering, you know, what's the deal with this injury? You know, is it just going to be some chronic issue we have to deal with constantly? Wiley has been a starter. He's important. But if he doesn't play, Cornelius Lucas gives you a comparable player. Deami Brown, you know, give him credit. He has earned a place in the rotation with his energy and his hustle, his speed. And, you know, he's been effective as a pass catcher at times. But if he were not to play, again, you've got Zaccheaus, you've got Crowder, not to mention McLaurin. Like, you can kind of get by without that. If you don't have Lattimore, not to say that they, you know, I mean, Sanders Hill's been good this year and so on, but that's a very big difference, right, between what they think Lattimore can be and how he can help this team versus anybody else they put out there. So, you know, at minimum, I think Lattimore is easily the one to keep an eye on. And, you know, again, because he's had this lingering injury, it may be the one that's most worrisome.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be something that we monitor. I know it just based off of the way Joe Witt Jr. called the game on Sunday, Ben, it was a clear difference in having Lattimore in the lineup. It was a level of trust. Did you notice, and I haven't looked at, you know, the true media numbers or the exact breakdown yet, it felt like it was one of the more aggressive play calling games from Joe Witt on the defensive side of the football, being willing to leave those corners in those one-on-one situations. Did you walk away from Sunday feeling that way as well?
Well, he has said in recent weeks, even before this game, that like he's really not given his cornerbacks a ton of help. And, you know, look, again, they have not been able to stop the run this year. The only two games where you could say they did, the Tennessee game where they were up, you know, a ton early on, and the Titans abandoned the run. And then the Saints game, you know, the Saints are playing with, you know, non-starters at quarterback. They have no receivers. And they do have Alvin Kamara, but, you know, it was easier to sort of stack the box, and then he also even got hurt late in the game. So they really haven't stopped the run. So I think he's just continuing to sell out to try to get more help there and have more guys around the line. And, you know, again, once Jalen Hurts was out, then they did a good job doing that. But, yeah, he's left his cornerbacks exposed, and that's, again, why having a guy like Lattimore is such a big deal, because, you know, his history says he's a guy that can deal with that. You know, everybody's kind of blown off the pass interference calls because, you know, they're 50-50 calls and they just happen to go sort of against him, and, you know, it's the way it goes sometimes. But, yeah, what he's able to do and the confidence you have in him going up against the A.J. Browns of the world is why you can also continue to send more bodies to the line of scrimmage. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be harder to do if he's not out there.
I agree with you 100%, and I think – and it's been interesting, you know, going back and forth with fans on social media. It's a sector of the fan base, Ben, that thinks Lattimore played like trash on Sunday for whatever reason, because of the PI calls, the giving up touchdown like you mentioned. But that doesn't put under the microscope the other snaps he had against arguably a top four or five receiver in the National Football League, talking about A.J. Brown. I was super impressed with the confidence, the swagger, the passion that you saw Marshawn Lattimore play with. So losing him, Ben, I don't want to overstate it because he's only played in two games, but I can sort of get the gist of how big of a deal it would be, especially when you consider Atlanta and what challenges they present to you offensively. Ideally, you'd like to go into that game with the ability to play the heavy box, the ability to leave your corners on the island. But if it's not Lattimore and it's St. Juiced out there Sunday opposite Mikey Samer still, how different do you think the game plan ultimately would be, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, they just Sanders still had a really
spot.
You look at some of the numbers; he's been overlooked at times when we talk about this defense.
Yeah,
but on the outside, beyond that, they don't have anybody to think about. I mean, I feel bad for St. Jude's to a degree, because now, over the course of a game, he was giving up some big plays and getting penalties. Now it all seems to be compressed into like 10 plays, and the same things are still happening. So, you know, at this point, I've been a guy that's believed in St. Jude's to varying degrees, but it's obviously not quite ever worked out for him. So, yeah, that would be a big deal. And again, Atlanta, you know, Michael Penix is a rookie, and you know, there can be ups and downs with that, but Drake London's turned into a legit top receiver. Darnell Mooney, the other wideout, has had a pretty big year, and Bijan Robinson can catch passes. So, you know, they've got weapons in the passing game. So, this will be a big loss if he's not able to go. And, you know, a bigger picture perspective, you know, when you get to the playoffs, you know, everybody's going to have some type of, you know, alpha receiver, right? Yeah. And this is why, again, you have that guy. So it's not just the next week or two. It's also, you know, should they get to the postseason, you know, giving you get best chance to win, and that's going to be with Lattimore playing.
I wonder, and Ben, what you said at the tail end of that is super interesting. I wonder how much of that thought process goes into how much you need him, per se, here in the next two games, as it feels like you're right on the cusp of locking in that postseason spot. Obviously, they could, if things fall their way, they could have that seven seed clinched by the time they kick off on Sunday night. Ben, I'll let you go on this, my friend. It's kind of a random question relative to the conversation we've been having. Brian Robinson fumbled two times on Sunday, and there was a shot that the Fox broadcast showed of him with the towel over his head, and he just looked absolutely dejected, and they benched him for a period of time during that. We saw him a lot more in the late third quarter and early fourth. I thought he was tremendous in pass protection despite the two fumbles. What is your gut feel of how the team is reacting to the fumbles, and do they look at it as an anomaly and a one-off?
Well, I think the issue sort of is, you know, if they had another option, maybe they might say, hey, let's look this other way because we don't want to, the fumbles are just, we can't deal with it. But that doesn't exist. Yeah. I mean, in a world of that Austin Eckler, which, you know, perhaps he's back. Quinn said that's certainly a possibility when he's eligible to come off IR next week. But, you know, they've used Chris Rodriguez at times, but really only in sort of like end of game situations when it's kind of mostly out of hand or Robinson got hurt. And Jeremy McNichols has been a solid piece, but he's not a guy you're going to lean into. So they kind of don't have any other options right now. So whatever they're annoyed or not, you know, nobody likes the fumbles, obviously, but there's only so much they can do to replace him. And that's why, you know, whatever their feelings are, they kind of got to get over it to an extent. But look, obviously don't put it on the ground anymore, because if he keeps doing it, then, you know, then you're going to have no choice but to go with Rodriguez.
And I know Cliff mentioned this briefly earlier. I believe the quote was paralysis by analysis when describing some of the deficiencies of the run game. Ben, when you crunch the numbers, and I know you do it often, they really haven't run the ball consistently in quite some time. Any concern with you moving forward about the run game? Because I am starting to get a little bit concerned, maybe is a strong word, but I'm definitely got some question marks about the lack of productivity over the past really 6 weeks.
Yeah, no, I think there's some too, for sure. I mean, you know, they were using two running back sets a little bit, not as the primary formation, but sometimes. And when they did that, you know, defenses were stretched out because you have Robinson's power up the middle, but Eckler's ability to make plays on the perimeter, or at least to, you know, give you like a swerving presence as opposed to a bulldozer like Robinson. But now when you take Eckler out, like, you know, sure, Jane Daniels can get on the move and run, but in terms of the running back, you know, you kind of just have to focus on Robinson up the middle. And, you know, I think that they're, you know, there was also, you know, the one game where Tyler Biadasz didn't play. I think that obviously hurt their opportunities up the middle. And, you know, the Eagles have, you know, Jalen Carter inside. This offensive line, you know, when we get to the offseason, we'll discuss what they still need to do to work that, mostly tackles. But, yeah, it feels like the combination of no Eckler and the offensive line play being a little bit down the last couple of weeks, and some of the opponents have impacted things. But again, you know, when we go up against the better teams in the playoffs, this is going to be the deal. So, I think getting Robinson on track this week would be huge. And we'll see if Eckler is able to come back over the last game or not. And that would be, I think, pretty big as well, just because they have nobody who can replace what he does out there.
We are in a wait and see mode for the remaining two games of the season, Ben, and relative to Sunday, we're in a wait and see mode as well, my friend. I appreciate you giving us some time. Happy holidays to you and yours, my man.
Well, now I appreciate it, man. Happy holidays as well. And we'll talk soon.
We will talk soon. Ben Standing, one of the absolute best, talking all things burgundy and gold. Make sure you follow his work at The Athletic and download the Standing Room podcast wherever you download your podcast. About an hour and change left to go on the program. A lot more to get to before we dish things over to the Take Command podcast. We'll let you hear from Cliff Kingsbury and Joe Witt. We'll give you an update on Alex Ovechkin. But when we come back, I'll ask a question that feels appropriate after Jaden Daniels' 5-touchdown performance on Sunday. I'll give you that question next here on The Fan.
If you enjoy deep dives into solved and unsolved murder cases, then Murder True Crime Stories is the podcast for you. Find Murder True Crime Stories on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
1-800-636-1067, the number on the MGM National Harbor List of lines. You can tweet at me as well. It is at NELL_BTP. Youngest in charge, Lanelle Willingham, sitting in for Grant and Danny. You know, the day after Christmas, Grant Paulson back with you tomorrow. He'll be alongside the great one, the man you hear on the updates each and every day here on The Fan. Toby Altizer and Grant will tag team tomorrow to get you ready for Falcons and Commanders. Speaking of Falcons and Commanders, I feel like I've used every adjective in my lexicon here this afternoon to try and describe how monumental, there we go, Sunday is between the Commanders and the Atlanta Falcons. The other storyline in this game that I feel like maybe isn't being talked about a ton, two of them, I guess. One, another Kirk Cousins return to Landover. Always down for that storyline. Two, think about it like this. Some of you out there may have had your head coach rankings different. I'll admit it. What I always say, man, I'm a man first. When I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I wanted Raheem Morris so damn bad. I mean, so bad. And I know the man that sits in this seat Monday through Friday, 2 to 6:30, was a big rah guy himself talking about Grant Paulson. And I know he was horny for Ben Johnson. I'll give him a break. But Raheem Morris was another one of the guys on his list. And after watching Atlanta to start the season and how long it took them to pull the plug on Kirk Cousins, I wonder how much of a grasp Raheem Morris has over the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, this was a group that was supposed to be significantly improved defensively. They add Jesse Bates. They add Justin Simmons. You've got A.J. Terrell at outside corner, a young man that, you know, I feel like isn't talked about enough and is one of the legit, you know, studs at the position in the NFL. And yet this defense, oh, Matthew Judon up front, they made the trade for him. Grady Jarrett still wrecking shop in the middle. Despite the personnel on that side of the football, it still feels like a group that is significantly underachieving this year. I mean, it just has not been very good. And I wonder how much of that blame you place on Raheem Morris. That's here nor there. We will see Raheem and company coming up Sunday as Washington takes on Atlanta in a big-time game with huge playoff implications. It's also Michael Penix Jr. versus Jaden Daniels. If you listen to me at all during the pre-draft process, I was pretty consistent. My number one quarterback was Caleb Williams. I even wanted to trade up for Caleb. Boy, would I look like an ass right now. My number two guy was Jaden Daniels. My number three guy was Michael Penix. And my number four guy was Drake May. I'm excited for Michael Penix. Not for Washington. A clear difference. I'm excited for Michael Penix because I think this was one of the ideal situations for him. You get to sit back and learn from Kirk. You're in a good building that's got, you know, good veterans on the roster. Not necessarily on the offensive side, but just surrounding him. I think Penix, I have a real concern about Washington's ability to stop Atlanta. I do. And maybe, you know, it's the contrarian in me, or maybe it's Ashburn syndrome, SLS, scoring lover syndrome, whatever you want to call it. But I feel like, you know, Atlanta, I'm a little bit concerned about that. But we'll get to Sunday when we get to Sunday. The thing that may change and make it not matter is Jaden Daniels. And the way that he played Sunday, 5 touchdowns, second most yards in his career on the ground, the big fourth down scramble, the game-winning touchdown. I mean, he has been all that in a bag of chips, for a lack of better words, right? And clearly, I was lacking better words. With that being said, like, the discourse out there surrounding the MVP in the National Football League, to me, is one that is, it's subjective, I would say. It kind of just depends on your criteria for the award. There are some folks that feel like the MVP should go to the guy that if you take them off the team would be no good. I don't like that because there are a lot of guys that you could take off the team and they would all of a sudden become no good, right? I think context matters. What year you're in, the heights of success you reach, your supporting cast, and then lastly, kind of similarly to what I just said, how desperately your team needs you to win. And when you use all that context, there are 5 MVP finalists, right? That's how it normally works. After watching Himothy Daniels on Sunday, how do you not think he is deserving of being one of the 5 MVP candidates? Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, knotted up to me at the number one spot. Then I would go Saquon Barkley. Yeah, I'm going Saquon Barkley. I wish somebody would call in here and say that Jared Goff's an MVP candidate. You want to talk about the most insulated quarterback in all of the National Football League? Look no further than 8 Mile's finest, Jared Goff. I mean, seriously, with that offensive line, with that receiving core, with that running back duo when David Montgomery's healthy, I mean, he doesn't have to do much. But if I'm looking at it, it's Josh Allen, it's Lamar neck and neck. Then there's Saquon. Then after that, I'm just so anti-Jared Goff that I may get crazy before I mention him as a candidate. I'd even put Pat Mahomes. I put Pat Mahomes in the MVP conversation before I put Jared Goff in it. Seriously. Joe Burrow, another guy that's putting up video game stats, but the wins and losses aren't there. But let's just throw Jared Goff in there for the sake of argument. People want to throw in Sam Darnold, another heavily insulated quarterback. But Sam Darnold's case a little stronger than Goff's because I think, the supporting cast in Detroit, hell of a lot better, especially up front. You know, Sam Darnold had to lose his premier left tackle in Christian Darrisaw, and they didn't miss a beat. So, MVP finalist, I don't know how many more guys you name before you get to Jaden Daniels. I think he's playing the position at that high of a level. And when I add the context of him playing with great value wide receivers, shout out to Walmart. Joking, obviously. It's no disrespect to Jamison Crowder or Olamide Zaccheaus. Two dogs. And seriously, I know we toss that word around. Those two dudes are straight up dogs. And I think DQ talked about it as like one of the reasons why he brought Olamide Zaccheaus in because of how dog of a competitor he was. You can say the same thing about Jamison Crowder. And it's so funny. DQ casually called Jamison Crowder JC during the press. Like, okay, that's just the nickname you all have adopted for him. I don't like JC. I think Crowder's cool. You know what I'm saying? And I love, first of all, Jamison's story is amazing. Under-recruited guy coming out when he got recruited to Duke. His sister is someone that suffers from, that has special needs, and he is very influential in her life. And, you know, for the My Calls, My Cleat thing, back in the day, that was his thing, putting on for that community. He's just a stand-up dude, man. And if you've ever had the opportunity to talk to Jamison Crowder, as country as they come, love that about him, though, man. He's just an authentic dude. But I say all that to say this. That's who Jaden Daniels is throwing to. Yes, I know he's got Scary Terry on the outside. And I also think this offseason, it's going to be super fun to revisit that conversation of just how good old Scarence Terrence actually is. But the offensive line's a makeshift group that is playing better than they should because of the quarterback and because of the scheme. It's just not a lot of talent around this young man, and he has legitimately transcended the DMV area. And I think that has to play a big part into this as well. So for my money, if I had a vote, Jaden Daniels would receive an MVP vote from me for sure. How he adds on to that resume and how he legitimately gets in the conversation, you let him go throw four touchdowns in a route win of the Falcons on Sunday. You let them go to Dallas in the finale and whip up on the Cowboys. How does he not get votes? I'm just saying. A lot more to get to before we hand things over to the Take Command podcast. But it has been absolutely awesome to watch his kid play. It's been tremendous. It's been tremendous. And I think as we continue to move along here during this roller coaster run for Washington, I think we're going to grow to appreciate Jaden and this team even more. Say what you want, and I know it's cliche, I know it's coach speak, but they genuinely fight their tails off week in and week out. And, you know, it's been fun to watch, man. They're a group that has special guys in the building. All the former players littered across the roster definitely helps with their success. We'll take a quick timeout when we come back. Joe Beninati, play-by-play voice of your Washington Capitals on the Monumental Sports Network, gave a very, very positive update on the status of the Grade 8 Alex Ovechkin. Well, let's hear from Joe B next here on The Fan. Still moving and grooving right along here on this day after Christmas edition of Grant and Danny. It's the youngest in charge, Lino Willingham, sitting in for G&D. I'll take you up to 6:30. Right now, I want to give you a little bit of an update on the health of Alex Ovechkin. First of all, let's get you an update on the Caps here real quick. In a little bit of a slump right now. We're playing some really good hockey, though, for here to start the year. They've lost three out of their last five, but before that, we're on an absolute heater. They suffered a loss to Boston. That's no team to, you know, scoff at in terms of losing to. They lost to Boston 4-1 the other night, but they got some good news on the tail end of that performance. Joe Beninati play-by-play voice for the Caps, joined the Sports Junkies this morning and had this update about the health of the Great Eight, Alex Ovechkin.
Yeah, I think this is the target is for this weekend. Nice. The team doesn't skate today. It's one more day of the break today. If I'm not mistaken, I was just checking out the itinerary. So they're going to be on the ice for practice tomorrow before they travel up to Toronto for Saturday's game. Ovechkin loves to play in Toronto, loves to play in Montreal, but especially those two cities where it comes to Canada. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what they're targeting for Saturday night, for hockey night in Canada. I've watched him, JP, the last two or three times he's been on the ice. He looks like he's just about there. Now, obviously, he may be holding some back because it's a practice, but I don't see any hitch in his get along at all. I don't see I don't see him favoring the leg that had the fracture. And if you do the math, I think it'll be just about 5.5 weeks since November 18, 19. If he returns on Saturday or Sunday, I think it's going to be without a set. If there's no setbacks and nothing's happened in the last few days, if he hasn't reported anything that's bothering him, I think they're going to target this weekend and Saturday night.
Joe Beninati with music to the DMV's ears. The anticipated return of the Great Eight, Alex Ovechkin, this weekend. They got two games on the road at Toronto Saturday and then at Detroit on Sunday. But, I mean, this is remarkable. This is a broken tibia, was it not?
I believe so. No, I'm sorry. It was his left fibula. Yeah, and so that is
Incredible, though.
It is. But when you consider, so it's not like a weight-bearing bone.
Okay.
So you can still skate like a little bit. So like after 2 weeks after it happened, he was back. He was back on the ice, kind of trying to work back. So the timeline, he's pretty much right on it. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing him back.
I can't believe it, dude, and I'm floored by it because one, we know how tough he is. He's tough as nails. But
he knows he's got a record to break too. Like he's a man on a mission right now.
His mind is on the record, and I can't blame him right now. Washington, a point back of New Jersey in the Metropolitan Division. In terms of where they stand right now in the entire Eastern Conference, as my computer just completely crapped out on me as I tried to read the standings to you. They're second in the Eastern Conference as well. Florida nipping at their heels. This game this weekend against Toronto, massive in terms of that group being on Washington's heels as well. But it's a good sign for the Washington Capitals. The fact that they were able to stay afloat without Alex Ovechkin, I think speaks to, one, how active they were this offseason. They're getting big-time production out of some of the new guys. And then the young pups from last year, a year older, making significant contributions. Our guy Protas, one of my absolute favorites, just a war daddy out there on the ice making significant contributions. I look at my guy Chucky Lindgren in net, man. He feels like during the slump, there's been a lot put on his plate because of the lack of offensive production, but I still think he's been damn good as well. He's one of those tenders, man, that has the ability to get hot, and when he does, it's tough sneaking one past him, man. Mad Max, as you look at the Caps here, as we got to wrap up and go to break here momentarily, what do you think is the key to them getting off this schneid, man? They've lost 3 out of 5.
Yeah, they've
against some good teams, though.
It's been good teams, but they've been just kind of a little disjointed, a little bit slow. I think this holiday break is coming at a good time.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a good time to mentally reset, get Ovi back in the lineup, and go on a run right here.
All right, we'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we will preview Thursday Night Football, plus let you hear from the coordinators of the Washington Commanders, Joe Witt and Cliff Kingsbury. That's next on The Fan.